time here. We have a roll call, please.
Uh-oh. Laura Hine. Bill Goggins.
Here.
John Kapler.
Here.
Kathleen McMonagle. Betsy Pringle.
Here.
Elsie Weber.
Here.
Rick Whitney.
Here. This is a special meeting, study session, that will be strictly for purposes of reviewing the update on the Shoreline Master Program, and we've got 1 hour to do it, so I think we better get started right away. Stacy,
Great. Take
it away.
Great, thank you. So we're here to talk about the Shoreline Master Program. What I was imagining is we could quickly go through some key areas of changes that we've made on draft policies you've seen before you, and then look at the new policies which you haven't previously seen, covering transportation, utilities, those, and or archaeological resources. So we can quickly look at those, and then talk a little bit about the upcoming open house that has been scheduled. So really quickly, looking at. First of all, I just wanted to check base and say at this point in time, I provided a real general overview of some of the key changes that were made to the different policies that were before you. Some of the general changes that have been made is we've added references to scientific studies in response to some public comments that we received. We've also added some clarification of the intent of a policy addressing shoreline vegetation and also addressing education and public outreach on shoreline vegetation issues. We've also corrected the usage of the term pier as it applies, as it appears throughout the document. So those are some general changes. And then specifically on issues related to shoreline stabilization, this has been one, and this has been and continues to be, and we expect in the future to be one of the key topic areas that there's going to be a lot of discussion on. And really at this point in time, the Planning Commission, they've seen the same information. They've requested some response to public comments that we received, so staff's working on that. We don't have that information for you this evening, but we're continuing to work on that, and we'll bring that forward to you at a separate point in time. What we had presented to the Planning Commission, what we have for you this evening, is essentially a little bit more background. There has been shoreline property owner concern that Kirkland's shoreline environment's not well suited for shoreline enhancement. We were concerned about those comments, and so did have our environmental consulting firm, the Watershed Company, analyze that issue. They did provide some analysis that's included in your packet, and they did indicate that really the shoreline environment, there are a range, a continuum of different types of alternatives that can be put into place, and it's all dependent upon a number of variables that need to be evaluated on each specific property. And so it can, you know, depending on the slope of the property, the slope of the lakeshore bed adjoining the property, the site, the locations of existing structures on the property, those are all different issues that need to be taken into account. And the solution as to how to go about enhancing the shoreline will be dependent on those different variables. And so we've added more of that policy language into the different to the policies on shoreline stabilization. And so we've acknowledged that there's a range of potential different enhancement activities given those existing conditions. And then we also wanted to make sure that we included some information that came to us, and these are really policy recommendations that came to us from the Chinook Salmon Conservation Plan, which really put forward this idea that shoreline stabilization is a very key component to the salmon recovery and conservation plan. So we wanted to acknowledge that and make sure that guidance is reflected in the policies. So that information's also been added throughout the policies. And so we believe that the approach outlined is consistent with on-shoreline stabilization, which again is to not require retrofits of existing developments, but to look to limit use of new shoreline armored structures unless there's a circumstance where they can demonstrate that it's needed through a geotechnical analysis. So that's kind of one component of the policy recommendations. Another component is when there's substantial when there's new development or substantial redevelopment occurring on a piece of upland redevelopment occurring on a piece of property, that we then look at that opportunity and see if there's retrofits that could occur or some type of enhancement, again, given the continuum of different site circumstance we need to look at to see if there's enhancement that could be done on that property. So that's essentially the guidance that we're looking at for the policy development at this point in time, the two key issues. So that's where we're at that point in time with this issue. And I didn't know if you had any questions about shoreline stabilization at this point in time.
Betsy?
Well, not so much the stabilization, but like it was Mr. Davis's comments about all the hoops that had to be jumped through, and so then people who maybe have a dock that's covered and it's, you know, and mm-hmm. it's just like they're just going to go ahead and not upgrade because it's just too onerous.
So that is an issue with our peer issues. And so far we haven't really said how we... That's an issue I think that's going to be very important for us to consider as we look at our regulations for peers. And we're not quite there yet. We're just at the policy language. We know what types of design features that the federal agencies have been looking for. And the concern that Mr. Douglas is mentioning is that his concern would be if the city were to adopt essentially verbatim the federal guidelines on piers and docks, because those are only guidelines, and it provides an expedited permitting process through the state, through the federal agencies. But they can a property owner can choose to not use those guidelines and go through a separate individual permitting process. And so that's the concern that Mr. Douglas has, is that we want to retain, he's recommending that the city retain that level of flexibility so that we're not requiring if we adopt the shoreline federal guidelines verbatim, that if someone wanted to vary from that at the local level, we would require them to go through a variance process. And the concern is that would be an onerous process. Mm-hmm. So that's an issue we really think needs some thought as to how we respond to that issue. On the other hand, the Department of Ecology is you know, providing us information saying there's scientific basis for those guidelines that the federal agencies have adopted, and so they're expecting local agencies to come up with a solution that's equivalent to those guidelines. So we're going to have to essentially evaluate how we want to approach that issue, and we'll probably bring forward some alternatives to you as part of the regulation development.
Right. I mean, it almost sounded like what he was saying was you need to have some incentives for people to change, because otherwise they're going to leave these existing structures in place mm-hmm. because they can. But it would be better if they didn't, but it's going to be such a hassle for them to change, they just won't. And so I think that was the thing I think needs to be looked at. Is
right.
Are there incentives, or is there some way to get through all that red tape?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the one thing that really caught my eye.
Yeah, and that's really definitely, I think, what Mr. Douglas is articulating, and it's an area of concern that staff has, and we'll want to look closely at that issue as we bring forward regulations to you.
Mm-hmm.
So the other issue that's come up as again, a key issue, you've identified it. I think we're hearing the same things from public comments. There's concern really about the practicality of installing vegetation along the shoreline area. Again, that was an issue that we did want to have our environmental consulting company respond to and take a look at. There is some analysis on this issue contained in your background materials. Again, wanted to highlight that this is one of the conservation strategies that has been identified in the Chinook Salmon Recovery Plan. So that is, again, part of the components that we're looking at to try and implement aspects of that plan into our Shoreline Master Program. Again, we've added policy revisions to acknowledge that in our plan, and again, we believe that the approach outlined in the policy is consistent with state guidelines and shoreline objectives that were established at the beginning of this process. And again, what we're looking at there is, as properties, first of all, continuation of our existing kind of tree regulation policies for protection of significant trees, and then as upland, as new development or major redevelopment occurs on properties, to see that we try and enhance the shoreline with appropriate vegetation along the shoreline edge. So that would essentially be some of the things. And then again, there's a lot of information about that, about public outreach and education on the benefits of shoreline vegetation is another aspect of the policies that are before you. So I didn't know if there were any questions on that issue specifically.
Yes, I have a question.
Yeah.
I read somewhere in here, I don't know, in all this nice paperwork we have, when the Corps of Engineers lowered the lake. Lowered it or raised it? I'm saying it wrong, right?
Lowered.
Lowered.
They lowered it.
Yeah.
Okay. That made quite a difference in what kind of vegetation there is around the lake. Is that correct?
Yeah. It exposed previously areas that were underwater.
So they wouldn't really be... Well, over time, they've probably grown algae and other things in there, but that land, we're going to try and rebuild that too, right?
I think the idea is looking at, I think the concept that staff's been framing it is not restoration to pre-development conditions, because there has been a lot of change that occurred when the lake was lowered. It really is looking at what the habitat needs are for fish and wildlife, and there has been demonstrated a strong need, as well as the other functions that shoreline vegetation provides, shoreline bank stabilization, filtering of pollutants, of sand. So those different types of things that shoreline vegetation do, we're looking at trying to establish a good shoreline vegetation edge to along our shorelines that we currently do not have, except in primarily two of our key natural areas, the Yarrow Bay wetlands and Juanita Bay wetlands. Now, we're not saying that we're expecting shoreline vegetation to look as it does in those areas. I think the photos that were represented in the materials from the Watershed Company kind of represent the type of shoreline vegetation we're talking about. So it's a mixture of appropriate vegetation and one that can be kind of designed to address kind of view corridors and view issues and that type of thing that I know is of concern.
Thank you.
That
was something I wanted to address, but I don't know how do you want to go through this?
Well, what I was hoping to do is really just summarize some of the key changes and see if you had any comments based on your overview of materials.
I do.
Okay.
I know that you were very concerned about the docks and the piers and the vegetation and all of that, and we all are, but... I was concerned over page 24, SMP 7-2. I was concerned that the new language does not reflect the original policy language regarding building heights. And It says that there are some low buildings there, but it no longer says that should be our... it took out the sentence that said improvements should be made to the visual and physical linkages between buildings and the lake, and it took out all of that last paragraph about existing development on the west side of Lake Street, bordering the shoreline, is presently low in height, and allows public views of the lake from many vantages around downtown, and also allows evening sun in the downtown core. In general, lower building heights should be considered in this area unless greater building heights are offset by substantial public benefits, blah, blah, blah. I don't know why that was taken out, but I think that's a big change to take that out, because that directs zoning, that directs policy in the building that happens on the west side of the street.
Right. So that policy, similar policy language, will still be in the downtown plan. We're not amending that at all. So so this type of information will still be as part of the Moss Bay Neighborhood Plan, which contains the downtown plan. So these elements that talk about that specific building height are still in that element of our comprehensive plan. What staff was trying to do here by making this change was really to clarify that the language that was in the supporting text really related and clarified what the policy intent was there. And we think that one of the key considerations for the downtown is this idea of enhancing our waterfront orientation. And so that was the key policy element that we felt needed to be brought forward as we talked in our Shoreline Master Program about the downtown area. But it doesn't eliminate the language that you're referring to at all, which is contained separately in our downtown plan. And as part of policy development, we will be establishing appropriate building heights as they would apply within the shoreline area of the downtown, within that shoreline zone, that 200 feet.
Well, I hear you. However, taking out this language piece by piece throughout, we don't have really much to say about the Moss Bay neighborhood plan. You know, I don't know if we see that or not. But if this shoreline management gives a really strong directive towards linkages to the lake and that sort of thing, but it doesn't address those building heights, I'm just afraid that eventually we're going to lose those low building heights because we're going to have, like, a better view corridor down a street or something, or they're going to cut through buildings, but we're going to end up with those four-story buildings there on the west side of the street. And so anyway, I just want to lodge that concern, because I don't think it hurts to keep that language in here as part of it, because the visual aspect of our linkage to the lake is such an important part of the Shoreline Master Plan. I mean, that is part of what we are told to do in the Shoreline Master Plan, is make sure that we've enhanced those view linkages, and to lose that evening sun or to lose those views across those buildings, to me is so anyway, I just, that concerned me.
I'd like to agree with Betsy. I don't think it's an overkill to have it in the Shoreline Master Plan and off.
Yeah, I think it's knocked out of one place, and then it gets knocked out of another place, and then pretty soon it's not in there at all. And it's like the comprehensive plan nowhere says anything about that as a priority. That's my concern, is it slowly getting eroded.
As a yes to that,
yes.
I think through good design, I can understand where you're going as an architect on this. I will tell you, from a conversation with friends and such in the city of Kirkland, it seems to me this is the one item when I'm over at people's houses for dinner, the one item that jumps up all the time, more so than the mass of houses and that sort of thing, but the view corridor along the main street in downtown, now it's becoming full of shadows now because the buildings are too big. So I hear it a lot from people that I know in the community, which was very surprising to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a big hot button.
Now, one thing to clarify is that, of course, this Shoreline Master Program does not, it only affects that area within 200 feet of the shoreline. So we know from looking at some of the maps that doesn't extend, you know, it primarily just covers those areas on the west side of Lake Street. So we're not approaching and addressing the many of the properties on the
Understood.
East side.
Understood.
Yeah.
The comment was for clarity that I think the comments are really, really important.
And the west side of Lake Street, if those buildings go up, then with evening sunset, then you will get a whole shadow on that whole downtown.
Yeah. I was just, I'm very surprised how often this comes up in conversation with people I know in town.
I might add that we've had more trouble with this particular policy than policy in our program. It's gone back and forth with the Planning Commission with you, and we're trying to replicate what's in the current downtown plan without overstating that as well. And any change would have to take place, and I understand your comment about one thing leads to another, but any change would have to take place to actually the downtown Moss Bay neighborhood plan before anything could happen. You know, we'll try to maybe rework this a little bit to provide a little more clarity on this, but this is one that continues to bubble up as we're not getting it right yet. So,
mm-hmm, yeah, we'll
have to, possible just to reference the two.
Well, maybe that's another.
Maybe that's another way.
Yeah, right. So that's not a match.
Spirit of matching this other.
Right. Exactly.
Well, I think when a city has has an overarching vision, it doesn't hurt to have that vision chimed in
multiple locations.
In various locations, so that whatever you're reading this master plan for, this comprehensive plan for, you really start to get at what Kirkland's all about and what the vision of Kirkland is, you know. And it's not this little piece about the shore, it's not this little piece of it, but it's this piece about what we have and what we want to keep. And yeah, we're going to upgrade it, and yeah, we're going to make it better, but you know, we just don't want to start losing some of those key features.
Okay. Downtown Heights has been such a slow issue for.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but you know what? Us old folks are dying off and moving away, and pretty soon you won't have us here to chime away about it, so we got to do it while we're here.
With that, I guess I'd like to just check in on shoreline land use, of whether there was, and that's attachment two, whether there were any other issues of concern that you wanted to bring up at this point in time.
Well, I wanted to take out that one sentence you added on page 25.
Which one?
The phrase, to the greatest extent possible.
Feasible one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would say that we want them to be preserved.
Period.
Well, however, if under the current zoning rule, current zoning regulations that defines an envelope around a piece of property, and somebody builds within that envelope, they're going to impact the views, and the view through that envelope will not be preserved. So I think the to the greatest extent possible is just clarifying that.
Well, and I guess I would argue that whatever the zoning is should take that into consideration so that the views are protected, so that we shouldn't allow something to be built there that's going to take away the views.
Okay.
So, but anyway, that's just my two cents.
Well, we want to get a consensus on this particular issue because it does make a difference. So
it's not just your view, Betsy. I share that view.
Okay.
Well, Betsy, you're not saying I mean, that. It really comes down to what somebody is. If the zoning permits something to be built, then you need to change the zoning. If you're saying that you don't want to see any reduction of the views. Then the zoning needs to cover that, right?
Yeah.
I don't think there's a difference in what you guys are saying other than that, you know, this shouldn't be overriding the zoning.
Right. This is saying, in addition, public views across the lake have been preserved in an expansive view corridor, and then it's just saying these views should be preserved.
Right. But you wouldn't say that if the zoning would, as John's saying, would allow someone to increase the current envelope, then the change needs to be made in the zoning, not here. You need to be consistent with the zoning, right?
Right.
Okay. So then, and I think that's what you mean by saying to the greatest extent possible. Because otherwise, if you say it should be preserved, period, regardless, well, then you're basically saying regardless of the zoning.
And I think that was really the intent from the Planning Commission had recommended this change, and I think that gets at why they were looking for this change.
And it also ties in with the other statement that you have about giving some flexibility through design creativity.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. It certainly doesn't expand beyond the zoning limit.
Okay.
So maybe I'm needing some clarification, and it's probably in here someplace, or I've had it in some training, but I'm fuzzy. The change in the shoreline plan, is that going to drive changes in zoning, or does zoning drive changes in the shoreline plan? Which comes first, the chicken or the egg?
They should be consistent with one another. So, you know, we're at a time where for the shoreline area, we're considering what rules and regulations should be in place that apply to areas that are covered under that jurisdiction. So when we do that, we should ensure that the zoning regulations that are in place right now, if we recommend changes, we need to go back and make sure that those changes are followed through in the zoning as well, because they need to be consistent.
And just to clarify, it sets the policy direction for the zoning. Now, there are many ways to implement that,
mm-hmm.
but it does set the steps and process. This is our intent to do this. But, you know, so you need to, as clear as you can be, it's better to establish the regulations.
So if I can clarify my understanding, there's zoning that's in place now.
Mm-hmm.
The shoreline master plan
is in place now as well.
It's also in place, but is
mm-hmm.
under review.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that we're looking at are making sure that any changes in the shoreline plan are brought into alignment with existing. No.
Okay. We would perhaps change the zoning to implement the policy or the plan.
Okay, but the policy and the plan that existed before was that the views should be preserved, period.
This is actually all new language. The red that you see is actually changes that have been made.
The last one.
Right.
That was
exactly.
I can go back and reread that and see. Okay.
But would the Shoreline Master Plan vision or policy, would that supersede a neighborhood vision or policy? I mean, where...
No, as I've gone through, we've tried to make sure that there's consistency between the two.
So is this one of those cases of so many permits and so many regulations? Person has
Sorry.
To go through the shoreline thing, and then it, let's say they're in the Moss Bay neighborhood thing. And they got to follow through what's in there, too. Or mm-hmm. You're making sure now what you're saying is that make changes there. You're going to change the Moss Bay neighborhood plan, too? Or are you just going to change the zoning? You see what I'm saying?
We would, depending on what happens with the Shoreline Master Program, that's probably coming first. And then if there are any inconsistencies, we would need to change the Moss Bay neighborhood plan. But we're trying to be aware that as we go along, we're not... obviously going to be perfect, but you know, as much as we can, we try to identify those changes that need to be done.
So basically, would you be holding, let's say, and I know there's only several hundred feet there or whatever, but that this plan, the new plan, is it even looking at what's the Moss Bay plan is for that area?
It is, absolutely.
And then
we're looking at that as background and then identifying whether we believe there's any changes needed to bring us in better compliance with the state guidelines.
Okay. I just want to make sure I got this right.
Paul, to your knowledge, based on the existing zoning for this corridor that we're talking about, is there any lots, any parcels that could actually reduce the views from Lake Washington by new development or remodeling?
Well, I mean, we do have the view corridor regulations in place,
right.
So we can't go below that. But I'm not sure I follow your question.
Oh, I'm just trying to, I mean, is
this
there...
This is really related to Carillon Point, this particular policy here.
Okay. Yeah.
And Carillon Point was developed through a master plan process right. with view corridors established as part of that process.
Right.
Okay.
So I've heard... Go ahead.
Based on existing zoning, there's nothing more that could... be done because it's through the master plan. They're not going to do anything.
With right,
right,
right, exactly.
Right. Yeah,
you have to change the master plan. That's true.
So it's really they're the same thing, right? I mean, you could either have with or without to the greatest extent feasible. It's still going to be the same.
To a large degree, that's probably true, mm-hmm. But it does provide, I think, some flexibility, so that there's always unforeseen situations that may come up. And, you know, preservation is an important value, and it's a strong statement. So I guess the question of how much flexibility do you want to provide, what's your comfort level, if those things do arise.
I wouldn't disagree with what Betsy's saying. I'd just strike it. I don't see a problem if you're saying that with existing zoning's there. We don't want to encourage any reduction of the views.
So I've heard a majority of the council recommend that.
John, you okay with that?
You know, the law of unintended consequences plays in so heavy. I really don't know how it might be played in the future, pro or con for view blockage. So I guess from that standpoint, I'd probably be okay with it either way.
I just think to the greatest extent feasible just opens a door where people just say, well, it just wasn't feasible, you know. I mean, I can't make my money without that eighth floor, you know. I can't afford to develop with, you know, and all of a sudden feasibility becomes a slippery slope. So
well,
I mean,
on the same breath, you're allowed to build that big. This would give them teeth to come in and say, we want to go ahead and reduce it a little bit more to preserve that view corridor.
Well, but we're saying in our regulations that the view corridor already should be preserved, and you're saying that the zoning, you think the zoning would allow obliteration of that corridor now as it stands.
I think the view corridor, essentially you could go along and create an envelope that you can build it within. That's it. Can't go beyond that. And what I'm saying is that to the greatest extent feasible, might come in and say, even though you're allowed to build a here, that view is so important, we might be able to say, nope, you can only do that, which could dramatically affect somebody. Somebody can't come in and say, oh, gee, I'd like to go a little bit more to make more money on my property if zoning won't allow it. They just can't do that. I mean, zoning sets the limits.
Yes, they try to get a variance.
But,
look, rather than, yeah, let's not belabor this too much. This isn't but just a quick sense of, we're talking about whether we agree with the addition of to the greatest extent feasible. And so who believes that we should keep that to the greatest extent feasible language? Anybody? Nobody? Good. So we're saying, no, we don't think we should add that.
Okay. All right.
Any other specific things that issues concerns on attachment 2?
Anything in attachment 3, which would be the environment section of the policies?
You see, one thing that I would just like, this is just a general question.
Mm-hmm.
What can you say to property owners to give them some comfort that whatever policies that we arrive at, there's going to be consistency in the way that they're applied and they're protected against some overzealous, you know, public, you know, enforcement person who decides that they want to, you know, really stick it to them, or they've got their vision of what it should be and they're trying to impose that beyond what, you know, maybe is reasonable.
Well, I think that's where I think when we develop the shoreline regulations, it's going to, you know, we're going to need to be very careful in what standards apply in that circumstance, and that they're clear, thinking about implementation and how the language would be implemented in that area.
So we're going to have that much objectivity. It's not going to be subjective in applying these standards.
You know, I think there's different.
We hope we have clear, predictable standards.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would provide guidance to both the applicant and staff and the public. You know,
in everybody's best interest.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. But we haven't gotten into the details yet. Yeah. This is just kind of the overriding.
I understand.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to.
Yeah.
Lead into that. So.
No, and it's a valid concern. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had one question about attachment 3 on page 45. I know one of the things you were trying to do was get rid of fuzzy language or feeling language or something like that. And halfway down the page on 45, the end of the second paragraph, there's that one sentence. Finally, some people may have strong feeling against using chemicals in water. I just wasn't sure if you wanted if
to
that
include
was
that.
One of those things that just you could get other people might criticize you for later.
Right. And we... just to update you on this issue, we're still continuing to work with the state agencies, particularly Department of Ecology. We're seeking some guidance on this issue still, because it is such an important issue that comes up in the public communication that we received. It has been throughout our inventory process as well. So we want to make sure that we provide the best information we can. So this is one area, one topic area, and again, this is a control of aquatic weeds that we're still doing some research on. If there are changes to this, we'll bring it forward to you.
Yeah.
But that's a good point.
Yeah, it's just that just because people have feelings about it doesn't necessarily mean it should be in our code.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Good point.
Yep.
Just as a commentary, I guess, I appreciate that you've clarified in bottom of page 43 and top of page 45 the thinning aspect to allow view corridors through tree canopies. So I think that's really good that you've stated that's allowed, and even though protecting the tree, we need to do that, but we are allowed to thin some trees for view corridors.
This is one where it gets a little tricky in how you implement it, but the policy is there. But I want to, and some of you may remember our tree regulations that we went through, but this is one where it does take a little bit of art more than science to be able to quantify in terms of what is appropriate trimming. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, I think views along the slope are incredibly important, and mm-hmm. I think, you know, a limb here or there at a window out of view is makes a lot of sense to me, and I think that it says it very well.
And I think it'll preserve trees if people feel like they can do some
exactly. Mm-hmm. Because that's the problem. If you're not allowed to window out some limbs, people just want the whole tree down. So I think that's I think this is a very good thing you've done. From my opinion.
I just wanted to go back to people's feelings about the herbicide. I'm thinking about the parallel with roadside vegetation, where people who own property along the roadside can opt out and say, you know, I'll manually control the invasive species here along my little piece of property, but I don't want spray on this little section. And that's something that I don't know exactly what the regulations are in Kirkland, but I've seen them elsewhere. In this case, because water is a little more fluid than street, that herbicide, even though it's applied someplace else, can carry to the area where somebody's living more readily than it might just along a roadside. So I'm wondering if there's some mitigation that could be put in there where those people who, for whatever reason, perhaps are property owners along that lake and might have some noxious weeds that need to be removed, if there's some latitude for them to take ownership of that or be subject to the herbicide application if they don't. I know that's kind of vague, but that would address a more mechanical means of just the feelings, but a response to those feelings.
Yeah, or maybe what it should say is that some property owners may not want chemicals coming over to their property, or something like that. It's
as opposed to people could be somebody who lives in
exactly
New York.
Exactly, you know, well, chemicals, bad.
I don't like those chemicals.
Is there any regulation that says they lake owner that uses the herbicides has to notify his neighbors?
Yes, there are so this is controlled by the Department of Agriculture, I think, and they do have notice requirements when they go to apply the herbicides. So there is that requirement. Okay, so attachment 4, that covers parks and recreation. Were there, and I just wanted to note that we did bring these policies forward to the parks board, and they had no recommended changes at this time. So,
anybody have any?
No. Is this where the view thing comes in?
No.
No.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so these are, now we're going to cover some new provisions before you, and it starts in attachment 5, so these were all new provisions, and we have a limited time here, so I'm going to really just curtail, and I just wanted to see if basically a call for any issues as you read through these that we could talk, that you wanted to talk about.
Well, float planes and helicopters.
That would be what I wanted to talk about. Okay.
Tell us.
You want one too?
So what? So our current standards for float planes is we do prohibit aircraft moorage. So that's where someone actually moors an aircraft. But we're silent. There's no discussion of just general operations. So if someone wanted to have you know, if you're a drop-off service or something like that, it's not really clearly addressed in any of our existing shoreline regulations. So the question is, and we were also approached at this time by, or actually we made the inquiry and Parks Department responded, that is this something that you're looking at doing with any of your facility, with any of your parks? And there was the desire to have the flexibility open to potentially work with aircraft floatplane operations to see if they wanted to establish any of those facilities, like in our more commercial areas, like the marina downtown. And so what we're recommending at this point in time is to continue to prohibit floatplane moorage within residential areas, but provide the flexibility, and we would come forward to you with regulations in the future on how we would do this, but to allow for limited commercial operation of floatplane facilities in commercial districts. And what we're essentially talking there is in the Central Business District and then the Caralong Business District down in the Houghton area. So that would be what the policy language presents to you for your consideration.
So what would that mean? Like there's a little plane that's down at the end of the dock and like and then you could get on a little plane and go over to San Juan's or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be like a charter operation, something
like
similar to that.
Is only it would be a little boat or a little plane.
Mm-hmm.
So currently, can somebody fly their float plane, bring it to the dock at Kirkland, and go into town?
There's no moorage, but they could bring it to the dock, drop someone off, that type of service. There's no prohibition against that currently.
But you're not supposed to in a neighborhood.
Moorage is not permitted at all. So there's no permanent moorage of the aircraft there.
Fly to your dock, drop off. And so if you lived on the lake, could Kenmore Air come pick you up at your dock? Is there anything that prohibits it?
There's nothing that prohibits it.
Now, why would we not want private people to be able to have their little airplanes?
The concern with staff was, is that consistent with community character? Are there noise concerns that might be more... You know, if you're in a more commercial area, there's more that type of traffic that we typically have boat operators, you know, working out of those areas as too. So there's already some of that commercial traffic occurring on the waterfront. So this activity would be somewhat similar, and then we would evaluate its specific impacts through regulations. Whereas, it's you know, we don't have those commercial level of activities occurring in a residential area. So that was the concept.
So if you live down at Yarborough Point there, you wouldn't you couldn't have your little float plane, right? Tied up at your dock?
No.
Right.
We don't have any regulations that say you can't, do we?
We do. Currently we prohibit aircraft moorage.
Ah, okay.
And yeah.
What about other cities? What are other cities doing in that on that?
You know, there's a wide range because, of course, there's a wide range of how people, how other cities, what their shoreline character is like. So in Seattle, of course, we do see commercial floatplane operations occurring. In other areas, there are specific prohibitions similar to Kirkland's that prohibit aircraft moorage. So I think there's wide variation. There isn't a lot of cities that directly address a lot of these issues either. When we tried to look for examples, we didn't come across a lot in our research.
Well, it's starting to sound like, okay, we got the Argosy cruise down at Marina Park, and then we're talking about getting some walk-on ferry lines down there, and then now we're talking about float planes down there, and it's starting to sound a little like Coney Island or something down there at Marina Park.
We got Ferris wheels.
Huh? I would almost rather have let people have their little float planes than commercial, but... I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I think it's all theoretical. I don't think that there's anybody banging at the door to set up a commercial floatplane operation on our docks, is there?
No, not that we're aware of. This is.
I think it's going to come. Because I think at some point, I think it will.
Why it wouldn't?
Right. Exactly.
And from my standpoint, why not? It might be kind of cool to go down there and take a little joy ride around the lake.
It's really a community value issue here, as Stacy said. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's not a lot of guidance we can provide from this, but it's really up to the community how they feel about those type of operations. Mm-hmm. And you're part of the community leader, so you get to weigh in.
So. Well, you know, I think it would have to be really strongly looked at.
So maybe it's better to identify either the concerns that we would need to address or mm-hmm. The benefits so that we can provide some context. I don't think you need to... It's one that's going to take a little more dialogue, but I don't think you have to answer it tonight, but I think if some direction would help. But, you know, this is the first time we've really talked about it in any sort of forum, and, you know, there may be... the public may want to weigh in on this at some point, but You know, I just want to get an initial sense of your thoughts on this issue.
Would it be possible to put, like, floatplanes, say, yes, they could be moored down at the marina and land with something that would say, this is kind of an experiment. This is to be reviewed, and after we get one, you know, reviewed, and maybe the regulations changed if it didn't work out.
Not like a pilot project,
right? So or something.
Or the, I mean, that's one idea. The other thing we talked about is perhaps making it like a conditional use permit. So you have to have a public hearing. You have to go through a process, and there may be conditions
that's
attached.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Notice is given. I mean, it depends on how extensive you want to make it, but that's another option.
So. I agree with prohibiting helicopters. Those tend to be a lot noisier, in my view. I mean, I always feel a helicopter when it's anywhere near. That seems to be a lot more egregious. But I think float planes are kind of a part of where we live on an aquatic, we live on a lake, you know.
Maybe helicopters, but they've got to have pontoons.
Well, okay, move this along. So is there any strong opposition to the possibility of having commercial operations with float planes?
I have not heard any hue and cry about it.
Okay.
As we have with some other issues, so.
I want council members to get free rides when they first start.
For me, thanks.
Is that going to be part of the public open house presentation? It might be a good place to get some comments from public.
Yeah, but we could maybe that or note that somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, we're down to 13 minutes, you guys. So let's.
Okay. So public access, really quickly. Where this is a, and I'm sorry, the map was difficult to read in your packet. What we were looking to do, and there's a larger scale map up here, is really just to we compiled all the existing sources of public access maps that we have, which would be the 2001 non-motorized plan, which would be individual neighborhood plans as contained in the comprehensive plan. And essentially what we're doing is showing all of those possible, what system do we already have in place, and that was shown, gosh, I'm even having a hard time reading it here. That was shown in orange, and then showed proposed connections. I'm sorry, the green were existing connections, the orange were proposed connections. And essentially what we're looking to do is continue the waterfront access trail in the Houghton area south of downtown along the waterfront. We have the existing sidewalks along Lake Washington Boulevard. That's one of the major areas there that we have that waterfront trail access system, and this shows connecting up the properties where we don't currently have a developed trail. So that's one of the major components of this plan that's before you. Yes?
All of the proposed projects, to my understanding, along the waterfront in Houghton recently have had some sort of trail connection through the property. Is that correct?
I don't know the status of all of them. This, our current regulations, and we're proposing that to continue, do not require a connection for individual single-family residences. So those would be exemptions if those were developed.
I should say the ones that I have seen in the commercial and multifamily housing projects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So this would step into the single-family.
No, it would not. We're proposing the same policy to continue. And so as a result, we do not show connections up in the single family area north of downtown. We do not show establishment of a waterfront access trail in that area because that is a single family residential area.
But if the existing single family in the Lakeshore area would redevelop, then they would probably redevelop as a multifamily, then they would be required to have an access trail.
Okay, thank you.
With it. Any comments on shoreline utilities? That was in attachment 6 policies. Yeah, any comments on shoreline design in attachment 7?
Attachment 7?
Attachment 7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. I just wasn't sure if policy SMP 26-3 was appropriate for the city to that public partner, public-private partnership to redevelop commercial block. Is that something the city does, is get involved in
public? So this relates, it's been an ongoing effort with the Lakeshore Plaza property, and this has been kind of an ongoing approach that the city has been exploring in that area. Because we have the park that adjoins private property, then that faces onto onto Central Way and Lake Street there. And there's the idea that if we can, you know, partner with the private properties there, we might provide a better, more seamless connection between our downtown and the lake front park there, is the concept.
So, but the city wouldn't be actively trying to be the developer, it would just...
No, I don't think that was...
All right. Gotcha.
So the other issue was related to public views, and we did have a map in front of you, and again, these were compiled in a very similar way by looking at existing neighborhood plans and identifying what views were already depicted. There were just a couple of views added by the Planning Commission, but I did want to see whether this map seemed to capture those views that you've identified, or whether there's any additional ones that you felt were...
I think that along the entire hillside in Houghton, the views are more than local views. All the way up to almost the freeway in some cases. Mm-hmm. So the map, I don't believe, adequately describes Houghton properly.
Mm-hmm.
Because the views from the hillside slope are all the way down to the water and the mountains, and that's more than just a local view.
And we're talking public views, not from private property.
I'd say every street that goes down towards the lake.
Yeah, but if you go up to the school, mm-hmm. if you go the grade school up there, I mean Lakeview Elementary, it's called Lakeview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have actually a view depicted right there.
Right.
Well, how am I missing that? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Right about Terrace Park. Park. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I know 60th Street, you've got it at the top and you've got it at the bottom, but all the way down 60th Street, that's one heck of a public view corridor.
Down 47th, down 45th,
every
one
street.
Of those streets. Mm-hmm. I mean, people walk that neighborhood at sunset looking at the view. That's a public view.
Yeah.
Neighborhood is all out there walking the street looking at the views because that's what they've got access to.
So maybe there's a way to capture that without... Yet. Getting too busy with the map, but I understand your concept there. Each right away that heads down the lake, people use that, and it's part of the character.
Why would you have to the north of, you know, on the north end of Houghton, you've got some big mm-hmm. arrows up in there, but that what John's saying, I think, is that entire hillside, mm-hmm. that entire Houghton hillside should basically have those big arrows in it.
Lots of little arrows like that.
Well, I understand the hillside, but that's a lot of that's private property.
Yeah, these were intended to really focus on public
right.
views.
Well, so, but the streets
yeah. down street,
right,
street.
See what you're saying
walk
there.
Down
yeah,
108th has mm-hmm. got a view.
I'd like to make a excuse me.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'd like to make a comment too, that within the last 6 years or so, we've lost two very major views. 85th Street corridor used to be, when, as soon as you came over the little rise on 85th and started down, you could see Lake Washington and everything mm-hmm. and the mountains. And now there have been trees planted along both sides of the road, down off the road itself. And now those trees obscure that view. The same thing is happening on 70th. When you come off of the freeway and you turn there to come down, you used to be able to see the lake, and now I think it's DOT has planted the maple trees up in there, but it's killing the view. And then there's trees down on 70th when it turns into 68th, center aisle, that has trees planted in it that goes down, and those trees are getting tall enough that you can't see the lake anymore from the stop signs at 100 and or at the stoplight on 106 and 68 and 6th Street. Used to be a really nice view through there. That was always open to the public and free. You didn't have to own anything to have that view. So I'd like to see that there not be put a lot of street trees in the middle of streets so that views are ruined.
Or that they be smaller trees.
Or, yeah. I mean, I'm not against trees, but make them short.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know, that's one of the ideas with identifying some of these existing view corridors is so that, you know, we can evaluate those issues as they come forward with CIP plans. 108
used to be an incredible view corridor, and now everyone's putting up their fences and their houses. You know, there's so many fences going up now on 108, mm-hmm. right up to the sidewalk. And pretty soon it's just going to be a walled street the whole way, and you won't be able to see anything at all. You know, and that used to be a beautiful view corridor.
Yeah, especially if they plant the English laurel and let it go up to 10 feet high and clip it off.
20 feet high.
Or
it's huge.
So, from my standpoint, I think we should put much more importance on every street that runs east-west. And
we'll work on that, on how to represent that and bring that back for you.
That's really what separates us from... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
They'll know you're in Kirkland when you ride down from the freeway mm-hmm. and there's the lake, there's the mountains. It's like,
see across.
This is what defines
the community.
And you get that evening sunset coming back at you.
And the light on the mountains.
Those views are totally free. I mean, we pay our taxes for those streets, but I mean, we get that beautiful view.
You got 2 minutes.
I know.
1 minute, so.
So really quickly wanted to mention open house. That is Monday, June 9th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. It will be in Heritage Hall. And this is just some brief information on that. It was also available in your packet. Encourage you to attend the open house. At this point in time, I also wanted to note that you do have copies of public comments that we received that weren't able to be included in the packet that have come in since then on the dais for you, for each of you to take a look at. So I wanted to keep you updated on what we're hearing.
Can we take a very, very short break? Go potty. Really short.
Really short. Start running.
We need 5 minutes to get the Radicus up and running.
Yeah, just long enough to get the tape changed. Start running, Beth. Okay. So, Stacey, anything else?
I think with that, I've heard a couple key changes that you're looking at seeing with the policies, but with that, we'll kind of move forward with the policy set we have in front of us to begin regulation development. At the next stage, we'll see you.
Yeah.
And thank
okay.
you so much.
When's
thank
that going to be?
That's going to be in late summer, early fall is when we're looking to schedule, have regulations come forward to you.
All right.
Great. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Yes. Thank you. So are we running?
Yeah. Okay. 2 minutes.